Hey, everybody, thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Preacher Boys podcast. I make this show for you, and I hope that you really enjoy it. I have a lot of people that ask me how they can support the show financially, and you can do that by heading over to patreon.com/preacherboys. You're going to get access to exclusive content, including early releases of episodes. I've got a couple episodes right now that have been released at least a month early over on Patreon. You've got access to things like unique merch, depending on what tier you join, and you get access to some behind the scenes content that I'm posting within the group. So head over to patreon.com/preacherboys and become a member over there today. Every single supporter helps make this show a little bit more possible, especially as I continue to add additional episodes and content every single week. Thank you so much for tuning in. Let's get back to the show.
Trigger warning. This podcast contains descriptions of various abusive situations. Listener discretion is advised. You are listening to the Preacher Boys podcast, a podcast shedding light on decades of mental, physical, and sexual abuse within the independent fundamental Baptist movement. The testimonies shared on this podcast are told from the personal experience and perspective of the survivors. Not all legal outcomes are known or final. Any suspect is presumed innocent until proven guilty in the court of law. To find more information about the Preacher Boys podcast and upcoming documentary, visit PreacherBoysDoc.com or connect on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter with the handle @PreacherBoysDoc. Now, here is your host, Eric Skwarzynski.
All right, Troy, thank you so much for joining me on the Preacher Boys podcast. And I'd like for you to personally introduce yourself and let people know what your first introduction to the IFB was.
Sure. Well, thanks, Eric. It's great to be on your show, and I really appreciate the that you went in this direction and are looking into all these stories, because growing up in the IFB, I kind of knew that I wasn't the only one, but right. I didn't really know personally other people, but this is great.
Awesome.
Yeah. So it started out, my name is Troy Brostrom, and I went to Emmanuel Baptist Church and School in Menominee, Wisconsin. And well, first thing I want to do is just to make sure that I get this out of the way, because people in the IFB movement, especially that I've noticed, they are super, super sensitive and super defensive if right. anyone has any kind of criticism. And yeah, so I just want to say that, you know, I'm not anti-Bible or anti-God or anti-Christianity or anything like that. I've never been shy about telling my story, but I've never right. had an outlet to be able to actually, you know, get it out to more than a one-on-one basis. But for years, anytime anyone would ask me, oh, what was that like? I would tell them.
Right. Yeah, so for sure.
I wasn't shy about telling what actually happened to me. So I was born into it. My parents both got involved in the IFB around the age of 10. Probably okay. It could have been like the late 50s.
Wow.
And they didn't go to the same church. They didn't know each other as kids. They went to IFB churches about an hour away.
Okay.
My dad went to the one that I grew up in Menominee, and my mom went to one in Woodville, Wisconsin. And after high school, my mom went to Pillsbury Baptist Bible College in okay. Owatonna, Minnesota, and graduated from there. And then I think she just had like a regular like Bible studies degree or something like that.
Okay.
And then she went on like a missions trip in New Mexico to the Navajo Indian tribe, and she was teaching at the school there. And she decided she really liked teaching. So then she went back home and went to a regular university and got a teaching degree. And then it was about 1970, I think, was when Pastor Hansen became the pastor at Emmanuel Baptist Church in Menominee.
Okay.
And in 72, I think, is when they started the school. And they just started like a kindergarten first. And then the next year, they, 73, they went to up to sixth grade. And my mom was like the second or third teacher hired at that school.
Okay.
That was how her and my dad met. And then, so I was born in 77. So that puts me at 42, almost 43 now. So, but anyway, so I was born into it. And as you could tell, they, you know, I was pretty heavy, you know, like they were super involved.
Right.
My mom was a teacher at the school. My dad taught Sunday school and was a deacon off and on. And so it was a, you know, pretty heavy dose of IFB right from the start.
Right.
And yeah, so that, you know, that was how it started.
Okay. So would you say that initial, cause obviously you were seeing it more from like the staff kid perspective. So obviously it's already a little bit different, but was your initial experience positive? Did you feel like, you know, you just felt like it was, I mean, obviously starting from a young age, like, did you just feel like that was normal way of life, or did you always feel like kind of uncomfortable in that world?
Well, initially I didn't know any better and I just loved it. Like I thought it was great. And I thought that all the quote unquote good people were like that because, you know, we were always warned about all the bad people in the quote unquote world. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So I think, you know, like up until sixth grade, really, I mean, I was all in, I was all about it. And I didn't know anything different. And yeah, I mean, I was all into it. The only difference that I saw from myself and my brother, who's 4 years younger, was that him and I were allowed to interact with other kids to some degree as far as like sport. So we were allowed to be like in the city, you know, like T-ball and little league teams and stuff like that, where nobody else from our church or school was ever involved in that. So like my big sport was basketball, and this plays a big part of my story. But when I was like fourth grade, I played for another church school team that was in like a city league that played public schools and stuff too. And that was really cool. I noticed quite a bit of differences with the other kids and their families compared to the IFB bubble that I grew up in.
Right.
So I kind of knew at a fairly young age that things weren't like the rest of the world wasn't like this, you know?
Right. Right.
but at the time, like I didn't really, that's as far as I knew, was like, oh, things are a lot different out there. But I kind of, you know, I kind of believe the programming that our way is the right way and the best way and everybody else is wrong, you know, or evil, you know, kind of thing, even though that it clearly wasn't the case because the kids on the team were nice to me. And like, so, yeah.
I mean, obviously you had a recognition that, you know, you were, you know, things weren't necessarily as crazy as maybe people would preach in the pulpit is like, hey, the outside world is a mess. So you got to see that there's some normal people out there as well. You know, outside of that kind of recognition, was there any other things that were taught that you kind of felt early on were a little backwards or maybe, you know, not 100% true?
Early on, no, to be honest, I was totally bought in and I just thought that's the way things were. Where things started to go sideways for me was seventh grade.
Right.
And Emmanuel Baptist Church School. Oh, did you just hear that? The collective gasp coming from Menominee because I named the church.
Right. So what was the first like really negative? Because obviously, you know, there's little things you can nitpick at, but what was the first time you experienced something that was like extremely negative where it started like radically changing your view of the church there?
Okay. So yeah. So like these 2 years, everything else in between was continuing, but okay. I'll just get into it. So, okay. Emmanuel Baptist, Christian school was basically divided up into two sections. They had kindergarten through sixth grade. And then it was very small. Like the church is only maybe back then, I'm sure it's smaller now, but back then it was probably about maybe 150 total that would come to the church.
Right.
And the school had maybe 50 kids in it, K through 12.
Okay.
So they would split up K through six and then like, you know, kindergarten, first and second were together, third, fourth, fifth were together, you know, this kind of thing. Right.
Right.
And then in 7th, 8th, and 9th, we're in a classroom. 10th, 11th, and 12th, we're in a classroom. And the Pastor Hansen was the superintendent and of the school and pastor of the church. And then Mitch Nelson was the principal. And the thing is, I remember Mitch when I was little, he was like the junior church or children's church teacher. And I thought everything was fine, you know, like as a kid, like right. I liked him and I thought he liked me and there weren't any problems. But seventh grade, so he would teach like 7th through 12th grade science and math. And seventh grade, I remember because my mom was a teacher, she was there a lot after school and in the summer, like during the day, and we'd go with her. She'd be fixing her room or correcting homework or whatever. And right. my brother and I would be in the gym playing basketball a lot. And I remember Pastor Hansen at one time pulling me aside. This was probably sixth, seventh grade, and telling me that I was allowed to come up and use the gym whenever I wanted because we lived like a half a mile away from the church and school. So I could just go up and use the gym whenever I wanted, which was great because I loved basketball. So I remember seventh grade, maybe the summer before, I'm up there playing baskets and basketball, and Mitch Nelson, like, he comes out to the gym and I'm in there shooting baskets, and he's like, "Guy, come here, like, I want to talk to you, you know?"
Right.
So I go over to him and he's upset that he's like, "Why are you in here playing basketball all the time?" He's like, "You should be home, like, reading your Bible and, you know, memorizing Bible verses and this kind of thing."
Right.
And then he started, you know, and it kind of would escalate from there several times to where he would take me up to the office, open the Bible, and show me from the Bible how God was upset with me because I was playing basketball instead of reading my Bible and praying or something. I don't really understand. Right. To this day, what he wanted. but yeah, so like that was kind of the first thing. And then in the fall, seventh grade, probably September, October, seventh through 12th grade boys had their gym class together. So that's a huge age difference, right? Like 12-year-olds to 18-year-olds.
Yeah.
And for gym that day, we were outside playing football and now, I was in seventh grade, and there was a group of boys in eighth grade. There was probably like five of them, and most of them are kind of bullies. Mm-hmm. So, and I was small back then. So, like, there was an 11th grader that I can't remember. We were doing some kind of drill, and, like, I was guarding him or whatever, and, like, I knocked the ball down, and then, like, he stomped on my foot with his cleats, you know? Or right. stomped on my hand, I should say, yeah. with his cleats. And so like he's like 16 and I'm 12 and like but like it hurt, you know, obviously. Right. So and I was like, and then like I look over and like that everybody's laughing, like the bullies are laughing, and I just got mad and I picked up the football and threw it at the kid and like hit him in the back of the head with it. Right. And so the teacher, who wasn't the normal teacher, he was just the sub that day, like he obviously didn't see the kid like stomping my hand on purpose, but like right. so I got in trouble and I got sent downstairs or whatever. So like anyways, like anything like that was like considered like a big deal there. So I remember the next day coming to school and like being kind of cornered by this 11th grader and the like five eighth graders, and like, you know, they were threatening to kill me and beat me up and all this kind of stuff, right?
Right.
And I'm like, you know, a 12-year-old kid. And so, and then I don't know if it was later that day or like at some point during the week, Mitch like would kind of like bring me up in front of the class and like how, you know, that was terrible what I did and that, you know, I needed to apologize and, you know, ask for forgiveness from God and all this, you know, like
right.
it was a big deal. And it was a kind of a public humiliation thing.
Yeah.
And that was the first time that I experienced that. Mm. And that went on. I mean, it just escalated from there for the next 4 years.
Right.
So another time, let's see, seventh grade, there was just so many things along the way that happened like that, where I would be, oh, so eighth grade, then the following year, that same kid who was now a senior, his brand new basketball shoes got stolen out of the locker room. Mm-hmm. So, of course, I was blamed for this, even though I didn't do it.
Right.
And again, it was the same kind of thing. Like, he brought both class, you know, both classrooms together. We're all sitting there, and he's like, somebody pauses, looks over at me, is a thief. And like, you know, and of course, he's like, this kid got his basketball shoe stolen, and I wonder who did it. And he looks over at me, you know, kind of thing. And then, I mean, it was just, and then like in school and classes, like if he would call on me to answer a question and I got it wrong, like he would just make fun of me and belittle me and call me an idiot. He would say, he would roll his eyes and throw his head back and go, well, the world needs ditch diggers too. if I got a question wrong. Yeah. Yeah. So like that kind of thing would go on like all the time.
Mm, that's not a great, it's not a great last couple of years. Did your parents being connected to this staff, did they ever say anything or did they know that this was going on at all?
So, yeah. So I remember going to my mom's room where she taught and telling her about it, what happened that day. And I was in, you know, I was crying and tears and everything. And I don't remember exactly what happened that day, but this would happen several times a week. This kind of thing would happen, right?
Right.
So, and not to mention, you know, the pulling me aside after school and showing me from the Bible how I was terrible and how God was going to punish me and all this kind of thing, right? So all that was going on in school and out of school. So anyway, so I went and told my mom, and I think she did go and talk to him. And I just remember them saying that, well, he just says that you're overreacting and you're too sensitive and you're too thin-skinned and you need to toughen up. So and so, like, I mean, for the next like 3 years, that's kind of how it went. You know, like this stuff never stopped, but
right. It
was just kind of like, well, you're just overreacting. You're too sensitive. I guess public humiliation is something I should have been okay with. But oh, sorry.
No, that's fine. I was just gonna say. So, what was the next portion of your journey? Was it graduation, or was there anything else that was happening throughout that high school?
Oh yeah, there was a lot. Okay, so I'll jump to 11th grade then. 11th grade, there were a couple of things. One thing was we would have chapel 2 or 3 days a week. So it was like a church service during school. And I just remember one time going up to chapel and Pastor Hansen was leading the chapel. And it was one of the senior boys. And like, he was in the front. And from the way I remember it is he kind of just like turned around and like was kind of like laughing and like put his finger up by his lips, like, shh, you know, don't sing, you know, kind of thing.
Right.
And so, like, he goes to, like, we would sing one song and then do the chapel service. And he goes to start the singing and nobody sings. And so he tries, like, 3 times and nobody sang. And then, like, he just sent us all down, downstairs. So we go back to the room and Mitch is in there, like, eating a sandwich or whatever, like, his break. And he's like, what are you guys doing? Aren't you supposed to be in chapel? And we're like, well, we got sent down because we weren't singing, you know, kind of thing. And then Pastor Hansen came down and told Mitch what happened. And then Mitch comes back in the room and he's just like red in the face, like mad, right?
Yeah.
And he's like, what? You guys weren't singing? And like, and he goes, Troy, were you singing? And I go, no, I wasn't. He goes, I knew it. I knew this was all your idea. And like there was like 15 of us in the class, you know.
Right.
And so I got blamed for that. And so as you know, like, you know, this started when I was 12 and now I'm 16. So this has been going on for like 4 or 5 years. And I'm at this point, like by the time I was 13 years old, I would just shut off when the Bible was talked about.
Okay.
Because, you know, I was shown from the Bible all the time how bad I was and how God was going to punish me, you know.
Right.
So, like, by the time I was 13, whenever the Bible was talked about or anything, like, my mind, I would just shut it off because I didn't want to hear it, you know.
Right.
So anyway, another thing that happened And this was kind of the last straw. So junior year, Mitch decides he wants to have a debate in class, and he kind of splits us up into four groups. I can't remember what the other two groups were debating, but our group, we were supposed to debate from the Bible the benefits of dancing, right?
Okay.
So obviously, you know, IFB is fully against that. So
right.
My group, of course, was supposed to defend the good merits of dancing, while the other group was supposed to say how bad it was.
Okay.
So I remember it was me and like three others, and we were trying to think up, because we knew what the correct answer was.
Yeah, it's not easy to be debating a topic like that, because I know for me, especially growing up in that world, like the idea of even having those conversations is kind of frowned upon. So if I was expected to actually defend that position at all, I'd be kind of stuck and dead in the water with any of that. So yeah, that's not an easy position to be in. So what was the, I'm just curious, because you're mentioning, you know, obviously your school experience, did you have anybody at the school that you did feel like you had a open dialogue with, whether it be, you know, a friend there or staff or anyone like that?
Okay. Yeah. But yeah, Pastor Hansen, definitely. I had a good relationship with him. And then another teacher there, Pastor Britt, they were both past IFB pastors, but Pastor Hansen was the one at Emmanuel Menominee. But anyway, this last thing that happened my junior year with the dance thing, we were just in that group, and we came up with two things. Like, we were like, well, number one is it's good exercise, and number two is you can meet people that way, right?
Socially, right.
Or whatever. So yeah. that was what we came up with. And yeah, Mitch just lost it and was just like yelling at us from the Bible about how there isn't anything good about it, and we shouldn't ever be
right
saying. I mean, it was just a total setup, you know, because he's telling us we're supposed to debate this.
Right.
And he wasn't just yelling at me this time. He was yelling at like the other two or three kids that were in the group, and they weren't used to it. And they were all like, you could tell they were kind of scared, and like, you know, it was affecting them too. And like, I just remember like actually physically like holding onto my chair, like, so I didn't get up and attack him. But because at this point I'm 16 and like it's been going on for years, and I'm at the end of my line. Like, I'm just super upset and mad all the time at this point in my life. And like, it's hard for people to understand, you know, I've been out of it for so long, but it's hard to explain to people that culture and environment and the bubble that you live in.
Right.
And like, I mean, that was my entire world. Like, that was my whole life, you know.
Right.
And everybody that I knew and was allowed to talk to was there. And I was always pointed out as, you know, as the bad kid. And as, you know, don't hang around him because he's a bad influence. And like, you know, I mean, I had friends, but I didn't feel like I had really any super close friends.
Right.
And I think a lot of it was because, you know, of how I was portrayed.
Right.
By this guy who and it's hard to explain, because this guy is, I'm talking about Mitch Nelson. He was the assistant pastor at the church and the principal of the school. And he's kind of like this real cocky know-it-all type, where he's always right and everybody else is an idiot kind of attitude.
Right.
And, but the thing is, and I don't know how he does this, but he can manipulate. I mean, he's manipulated that church for 40 something years to where, you know, they think it's God, Jesus, and the archangels and Mitch Nelson, you know, all kind of together, you know. So he's kind of got that place. Like, and it was weird. Like, I went on to the website just recently, and like, they got a new pastor just within the last year or two, and like,
right,
even in his little bio, like, he talks about how great Mitch Nelson is, and I was just like blown away. Like, it's supposed to be a bio on the pastor, and he spends like three or four sentences talking about Mitch. But anyway, so this happens, and I'm like on the edge, and I'm afraid, like, I'm not gonna. And the thing is too, is as this has gone by, my anxiety has gone through the roof, to where when I would get called out and embarrassed in school, I would start shaking like uncontrollably. I don't know if it was just nerves or anxiety or what it was, but
yeah.
I was like trembling, like shaking. I was so mad. Mm. And after that, this last dance thing happened, I went up to Pastor Hansen, who I had a pretty good relationship with, and told him I needed to talk to him. So I went in his office and sat down and just let it all out. Like, I was crying and upset. And I remember telling him, like, something needs to be done or I am going to punch this guy in the face. Like, and I remember like specifically saying that I am not going to be able to control myself. I'm going to physically attack this guy. And Pastor Hansen was a Korean War veteran. So like, and I remember being in his office, and I don't remember specifics, but I remember I said some colorful language in there. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking like, I'm in big trouble because I'm in here swearing. And he didn't, I think he could tell that I was at the end of my rope, you know, kind of thing. And he didn't say anything about it. All he said to me was, he's like, Troy, he's like, I believe you, and I want to thank you for coming to me and telling me this. He goes, because I've heard rumors of Mitch kind of like picking on one kid out of a group.
And okay.
Consistently picking on this one kid over and over to make an example out of him. He goes, I've heard these rumors, but nobody has had the courage to come and talk to me face to face about it.
Yeah.
So Pastor Hansen goes, I'm going to look into this. He goes, I believe you. He goes, I'm going to do some investigations. He goes, give me a couple of weeks. He goes, I can tell that you're not lying when you're saying that you can't take this anymore. So he said, from now on, I am going to sit in on Mitch's classes that he has with you. And for the next 2 weeks while I investigate this. So, and he did. Every time Mitch had a class, Pastor Hansen would come in and sit in the back of the room. And it was just so funny because Mitch was just so pissed off seeing that, right?
Right, yeah.
And I think he knew why. And yeah, I mean, he would just stare daggers at Pastor Hansen in the back of the room. And so anyway, a couple weeks later, Pastor Hansen calls me into his office and tells me, he goes, I called like, I don't know, I can't remember how many people, but he said like 20 or 30 different alumni. And he goes, they all said the exact same thing. Yeah. And they all said that he does this. He'll pick one kid out of the class and bully that kid and just pick on him over and over. It's like it's his one kid that he picks on in each class.
Right.
And he's like, I'm afraid of, you know, like you said, somebody going after him. He goes, I'm afraid of a lawsuit or a class action lawsuit. And he's like, and of course, you know, IFB thinking, he's like, that would give us a bad name.
Yeah.
And he goes, you know, not to mention, you know, we don't have the money to fight a lawsuit. So he goes, I'm not going to kick him out of the church. He goes, but I am going to remove him as principal. I'm firing him as the principal. And I was just like, wow. Like, I couldn't believe it that somebody actually believed me,
right?
Investigated it and found out that I was telling the truth.
Yeah, that's incredibly rare. And so that's pretty huge.
It was. So I remember he sent out a letter the next day to all the parents of the kids in the school saying that Mitch was fired from being the principal and he was done. And there was a huge backlash because, like I said, Mitch had this control over the church congregation. So, I mean, people were all upset. They, of course, were, you know, nobody said anything like directly to my face at the church, but right. I would just get a lot of like dirty looks and like, you know, people just staring me down and stuff at church because I still had to go to church. Sunday morning, Sunday night, and Wednesday night, of course, and youth groups on Saturday and Monday through Friday school. So, like, I couldn't get away from it. And now I've got the church people all, everybody that I grew up with, everybody that I know my entire life now is mad at me. And, like, I'm the bad one, you know, because I'm because I, you know, got poor Mitch fired, you know, poor humble Mitch, you know.
Right.
So anyway, what happened was the church, Mitch was still leading the children's church service. So like after Sunday school, they would have like a little thing where everybody would be up in the main auditorium together. And then the children's church would go down in the basement. Well, and then Pastor Anson would do a sermon. Well, I'd say 60 to 80% of the congregation would get up and walk out and go down to the children's church with Mitch.
Wow.
And then Mitch would invite, you know, those people over to his house after church for, you know, sing-alongs or whatever. So like Pastor Hansen, I remember him a couple weeks later again calling me back into his office and saying, look, he goes, this has caused more issue than I thought it would. And he's like, I don't want the church to split. He's like, I kind of think that's where this is going.
Right.
And so he said, what I'm going to do, he's like, I thought about this. He's like, I think I'm going to, because he's like, you've only got 1 year left of school. He goes, I'm going to give him a 1 year, quote unquote, sabbatical, right?
Okay.
He's like, so I'm going to basically remove him from the school for 1 year. That way you can graduate. He won't be back in the school trying to get even with you.
Right.
And you won't have to, you know, you won't get in trouble for fighting or anything. And he goes, because if I do bring him back and you're here, he is going to go after you. And I'm like, yeah, I know he is. So anyway, so he said, I'm going to try this and see how this goes. So he sent another letter out to parents saying that he changed his mind and that it's just going to be a 1 year sabbatical. So that's kind of where, what they stuck with at the end of my junior year is they decided that would be okay. But the congregation still, it just got worse, you know, as over the summer and into the next, my senior year, the fall. And so I think it was like a September or early October on a Wednesday night service is done. And usually he would, you know, dismiss everybody, but he's like, before you go, he's like, I have an announcement to make. And then he said that he'd been there like 24 or 25 years and that in order to keep the church from splitting, he was going to resign. And he didn't tell me this beforehand.
Hmm.
So I was just shocked because here I am like a month into my senior year and the only guy that stood up for me, he's going to resign, you know?
Right.
And I knew that it was because of, you know, because of me reporting what was going on.
Right.
And so like Mitch, like, of course, like I'm just furious. And Mitch like runs out through the front door. Like as soon as he says you're dismissed, and like there were people between me and the aisle because I was like shaking and like furious. And like, I was trying to go after him. and I was like, now is my chance because he's not in charge of me anymore anyway, so I don't care, you know.
Right.
And like I'm trying to get through the aisleway to get to him, but he's like, by the time I get to the front door, he's already almost to his car. And I just remember like yelling from the front of the church and cussing him out. And but he just ignored it, got in his car and left. And
crazy. So what was the next year like? What was that senior year like? It's crazy that this is all before senior year, like kind of hitting a boiling point that early on.
Okay, so my senior year, they had Pastor Britt be the interim principal.
Okay.
Who I had mentioned before was this really good guy that was a teacher there. And I remember him saying before my senior year started that summer, he was like, Troy, he's like, I know this has been rough. And he goes, I know, Mitch. And he goes, I'm glad you said something. I'm glad, you know, I'm glad you spoke up.
Right.
And he's like, I really want you to have a good year this year. And he's like, so I'm going to, you know, kind of let you do what you want, basically. And so, yeah, like my senior year was really fun and went really well. But what there was some strange things that happened my senior year. And this just, by the time I was in eighth grade, I knew that I didn't want to be a part of the IFB movement anymore. And I didn't want to, because they were always pushing Bible colleges, you know, Baptist Bible colleges. Maranatha in Watertown, Wisconsin was a big one. Pillsbury was pushed when I was younger, but by the time I got into high school, they weren't pushing that one as much. But
okay.
They were pushing Maranatha, Bob Jones University, and Pensacola Christian College were the main ones they were pushing.
Okay.
And of course, like, I was the first one from our school to ever be, like, recruited by colleges for basketball. So, of course, they were really, like, trying to get me to go to Maranatha and play on the basketball team down there. And I just remember thinking, like, even by the time I was in eighth grade, I knew I didn't want to go to, because I had turned it off. And it was like, I didn't want to have anything to do with that anymore, you know?
Right. Yeah.
So, like, I was recruited by, like, local NCAA Division III colleges and a couple of NAIA schools. And I'm getting ahead of myself a little bit, but there was this college that played an independent schedule that played, like, 40, 50 games a year, and I really wanted to go there, but it wasn't a Baptist Bible college. And during my senior year, they hired a new youth pastor. And I just remember this youth pastor kind of, like, taking me under his wing and trying to get me to change my mind.
Yeah.
And he told me this story, and I don't know if any of it was true, but he's like, you know, you have to follow God's will for your life. And he's like, and if you go into that, if you went to that college, that would not be following God's will. Then he's like, tell me a story about something that he did that he didn't follow God's will. And then his niece ended up with cancer or something. And he was like, and she wouldn't have gotten cancer if I would have just followed God's will for my life. And so, like, he was basically saying, like, you know, if I go to that college, somebody that I know and love is going to die, basically, was what he was saying. And so I'm getting ahead of myself. So getting back to my senior year, someone that you had recently on your program, Rebecca Palmer, she went to the same church and school that I did. And I didn't really know her because there's about a 10-year, give or take a few, age difference. I'm like 10 years older than she is. So I knew who she was, and I knew her story because of the all the physical, you know, and health issues that she was having when she was little. And of course, you know, I knew her mom and dad, you know, from church and everything. And but so towards, I think it was like towards the end of my senior year, this kid that was in the school, and he was like 2 or 3 years younger than me. He was like 15, mm-hmm. and like maybe in ninth grade. And I just remember, like, coming home from church on a Sunday night, and my parents were driving home, and we were there longer than usual and talking, and they were trying to have this conversation kind of hush hush, you know, like, so the kids don't hear in the backseat kind of thing. And we get home, and but at this point I'm a senior and I'm 17, almost 18. And I'm like, what are you guys talking about? You know? And I was like, well, kid got caught by one of the parents, like, molesting a little girl in the nursery. And this kid, like I say, was like 2 or 3 years younger than me. He was like 15. And I guess the kid was like 2 years old, the little girl in the nursery. And see, you know, I know who it is, but I've never talked to her. Their family, of course, like, I think the mom, like, walked in and found, you know, saw it, got her daughter out of there. The kid that got caught, they took him out of school for the rest of the year. But I don't know if anything ever happened. I remember hearing was that, oh, he was at home and working a lot. That was his punishment. And I just remember thinking how strange that was.
Right.
And then I remember hearing after that how they were trying to get him back in the school, and, like, they were trying to keep it all quiet and covered up. And then years later, you know, I heard about Rebecca writing that book, and she wasn't the one that where this all came out, but, you know, apparently it happened to her. And then there's another girl that I've talked to since then that happened to her, but she hasn't come forward. So, I mean, I know from the story that I know of three people, you know, that this happened to, and it was all covered up and hushed up because they didn't want, you know, the church to look bad, quote unquote.
Right.
And yeah, it was just messed up. But yeah, going back to my senior year, like I say, Pastor Hansen resigned in September, October. And then in February, they hired a new pastor, Pastor Owens. And I got 3 months left until I'm finally free and I'm finally out of there. And Pastor Owens calls me into his office 2 weeks after he hired. And he's like, Troy, I cannot get anybody to tell me what happened. He goes, but why isn't Mitch the principal? He goes, one person that I talked to did tell me to come talk to you, but nobody would tell me why. He goes, I don't know what's going on. He goes, I've got all this pressure from people telling me I need to put Mitch back in the school, And he goes, I don't even know why he's out of the school.
Right.
And so I told him the whole story, and he's like, got, you know, and he's all upset. He's got tears in his eyes, and he's like pounding his fist on the table. And he's like, as long as I'm the pastor, Mitch Nelson will never be the principal here again. Hmm. And so this is in February. I graduate in May, and like a week or two later, Pastor Owen sends a letter home to the parents saying Mitch Nelson will be back in the school.
That didn't last very long.
No. And I, you know, for like 20 something years, I've been upset about that. But recently, you know, since this podcast came up and I started thinking about it again, I started talking to some friends, and they were like, you know, maybe that pastor did mean what he said at the time. Maybe he wasn't like just straight out lying to you about it. And maybe he just had so much pressure put on him from, you know, the other people in the church that he just kind of gave into it, knowing that you were gone anyway.
Right.
And so, yeah, I mean, that's kind of how I think it probably did go down.
Yeah. So just circling back really quick. So I know you had mentioned that there was obviously some abuse going on just with one of the older students. And yeah. I mean, I know we talked a little bit beforehand, but was it just one of the kids that was affected? Was it something that happened repeatedly? And is this someone who's, you know, was this ever dealt with past that? Are they still in the IFB world? Like, how has that played out since?
Well, and this is kind of a mystery because I don't think anything was ever reported. Now, the girl that he was caught with, you know, where this all got exposed, that family just left, you know, they left the church and never came back.
Was she super, super young? Was she like middle, like junior high age?
The girl that he was caught with originally was like in the nursery, like 2 years old.
Okay. And that was the only case that was known about.
Right. Until Rebecca came forward. And got it. I think she said it started with her when she was about four.
Wow. That's four. Crazy. And
yeah, there was like a serial child rapist in the church and school for years.
That's crazy. Wow. Yeah, it's weird that the punishment for that was literally just have him work from home for a little bit.
Yeah.
That's such a bizarre.
Yeah, for like the rest of the school year. And then he was back in school that next fall and graduated, you know, 2 or 3 years later. And wow. He never, as far as I know, nothing was ever reported. He's never been in trouble. And he's still involved in the churches today that I know of.
In like a staff capacity or?
I don't know if he is staff or not. I wouldn't know. I haven't really talked to him in 20 years.
Right. That's not necessarily someone you want to reconnect with.
Right. Yeah.
Got it. So, So obviously in your senior year and you end up leaving, what was the journey like after that? Was it, you know, did you end up ever going to, I know you were looking at a non-IFB college. Did you ever end up going to a non-IFB college? Did you end up, you know, last minute switching over? What was your kind of experience post the high school?
Okay. This is pretty wild too. So like I graduated from high school and I ended up not going to the college that was recruiting me for basketball because, like I said, this youth pastor basically said somebody I loved was going to die if I did. So I got scared and didn't go anywhere. And I just stayed home. I took like a class at the local university and I was working on campus. And it was like everything. I was still going to the IFB church, but only like on Sundays, you know.
Right.
And it was like everything kind of like all the illusions that were put up in front of me for years came, you know, tumbling down. And I went into this like deep depression. Mm-hmm. And I was diagnosed with major depression, anxiety disorder, post-traumatic stress disorder. I had two suicide attempts when I was 19. And it was just like, it was like, okay, I get out of the IFB and I was told that everywhere else is terrible.
Right.
Compared to this, you know, like heaven on earth that I was in, which as you could tell wasn't. and the thing is, I was always told like, no, don't talk about this. Don't talk about this because, you know, you don't want, it's going to make the church look bad. It's going to make God look bad. It's going to, you know, we just don't talk about it. Don't talk about it. And then like, so I started having all this problems and like I started going to counseling and therapy and like I started talking about it and then like I realized like I need to talk about this and that's how I am now, like all these years later. If something happens to me in life, it's like immediate, I gotta go talk about this because I do not want to hold it in, because when I was holding it in all those years, like just the anger and the like, It was bad.
Yeah.
And so I did, I went to colleges. I don't know how many I've been to. I don't have a bachelor's degree, but I have an associate's degree.
Okay.
And when I was 20, I went to a junior college and I was like determined I'm going to play a year of college basketball. So I just like went to this junior college and tried out and made the team and played a year of junior college. But my depression was so bad and I was on so many different medications and, right. But I was literally sleeping like 16 to 20 hours a day. And, but when I was 20, I got involved. I've always been a fan of professional wrestling and it was a way for me to also to kind of get rid of some of that anger in a positive way. Uh-huh. So I started training for professional wrestling when I was 20 years old, and 22 years later, I'm still doing it. And now I own my own professional wrestling company. And yeah, it's great. Gives me an outlet. And the stuff doesn't really bother me on a day-to-day basis anymore because right. It's been so long. But like when I do talk about it and bring it up, it's like it does kind of bring up some of that stuff again.
Yeah.
But when I was, I'd say 24, 25-ish, between like 18 and 25, I would have constant dreams where I was back in like the teenage years at Emmanuel. And I was at that age now. So like I was 23 years old dreaming about being 13, but I was 23 sitting in the dream. And like, I would like in the dream, I would recreate the circumstances and I would make it be how I wanted it to be.
Right.
So I think I was just like, it was my mind working through that trauma, yeah. You know?
Well, that was,
and instead of just sitting there and taking it, like I would stand up and like stand up for myself, you know?
Right. Yeah. Now that's something I believe it was Claire Horner, she's a therapist I had on, I believe it was her, but she talks about that idea of your, you know, your brain tries to, like, when you experience a trauma of any kind, it breaks off basically a connection in your mind, and your mind will do things to try to help you reconnect that broken connection. And so,
yes, that you know, totally that, makes sense. Yes.
That sounds exactly like what you were doing, is like trying to replay it in your mind with alternate endings or alternate choices.
Endings.
Right.
Yeah. That's exactly what I did for years.
Right. So what's been most helpful for you? Like, I mean, obviously, you know, you said like, I mean, time does heal some of those wounds, and it does allow exactly. you to move on and get some perspective and things like that. But is there anything else that's been helpful for you in terms of, you know, healing and, you know, kind of recovering from a negative kind of childhood experience?
Yeah. Well, like I've told people, like professional wrestling, like totally changed my life and my worldview, because I was so socially inept when I got out of the bubble, because I was only used to talking with people in that bubble. And when I was like 18, 19, I didn't interact with anybody. I just stayed home and slept. And then like, even on the basketball team, I didn't interact with them much. But in wrestling, like, you have to interact with the promoters and the other wrestlers, because you have to fit in order to be a part of it. So it really helped me to be able to socialize, because when I was going through counseling, I remember when I was 19 and I had some really difficult stuff going on. I remember the counselor telling me, like, don't be so hard on yourself. He's like, you're basically socially and emotionally about 7 years old.
Wow.
Even though you're 19.
Right.
And so it was like, I didn't develop well because of all the trauma that happened once I was 12, 13, you know.
Right.
But wrestling really broke me out of that shell, and I was able to meet people, and I, you know, had to travel around, and it was, yeah, like, I think just basically getting out of that. And I didn't attend a church for years until I was in my early 30s. And I had kids of my own, and that programming kicked in. And I just remember, like, you know, my kids were little, like, you know, 4 and 1 or 5 and 2 or whatever. And I just remember, like, hearing over and over in my head, you got to get those kids in church. You got to get those kids in church.
Right.
So I went to there's a IFB church in the town I live in now in Eau Claire, which is, you know, it's like 30 miles from Menominee, but this guy that he went to, his name's Tim Hallett, and he went to Emmanuel when I was little, and I remember him in like second, third grade. He was a couple years older, but he's the pastor of that church. So I thought, you know what? I'm going to try it. It's been so long now. I'm going to try going there and going with the kids and just kind of feel it out, get a feeling for it. And I had a good feeling there, and I went there off and on. Like, I was never a regular, but I'd go like on Sunday mornings once every 2 months or so.
Right.
And I went there for about 3 or 4 years, and I just wanted, basically, for two reasons, the programming of got to get the kids in church. And then the other thing was I wanted to have a good experience to kind of close the door, because I know I'm never going to get any kind of, I don't even want an apology, but like an acknowledgement of, yes, this did happen and you did the right thing and I'm glad that you reported it. You know,
right.
But at the same time, I know I'm never going to get that from anybody in Emmanuel. They're just going to ignore it and try to move on and act like it didn't happen. That's kind of what they've done the last 25 years, even
right.
though, like, if anybody goes back and finds a yearbook from 94, 95, they would see he's not even in the faculty section. So, they just try to act like it didn't happen and that I never existed, even though my brother, younger brother, and cousins who were also younger said that Mitch would still get behind the pulpit and call me out by name and use me as an example of how evil, you know, evil kid, you know, kind of thing.
Right. Oh, so
years after.
So obviously your experience was, you know, in a lot of ways limited to, you know, that initial church experience, but, you know, you have gotten to see, you know, a little bit more outside of that. You've gotten to spend time with people who, you know, have been involved in that movement, have conversations, find, you know, you mentioned before we started, like, even hearing interviews on the show, like hearing that there's other people who experience similar things. So knowing all of this, do you feel like there's a possibility for like the IFB to ever be reformed or to change for the better? Or do you feel as though it's somewhat of a lost cause?
I think that there are good people. And that's the thing too, is that my entire experience at Emmanuel Menominee wasn't bad. There were good times there too, but the bad needs to be pointed out, and I feel like it needs to be talked about. As far as the movement as a whole, like ever being able to, I just don't think so, because of they want to control every aspect of your life, and they do that through fear. And, you know, trying to manipulate you through fear. And it's like, you can't, it just doesn't make sense to me that wanting to control somebody through fear and intimidation.
Right. I feel like it seems to reflect an insecurity in your own beliefs. When you have to scare other people into it, it means your information's probably not that compelling.
Right. And it's probably false, and they're afraid that if you get out and look into anything else, that you're going to see that there's falsities in it.
Right.
And that was the other thing too, is that I was always very curious about other religions and other ways of spirituality. And I was always told that it's all demonic and evil and not to look at anything else. And, you know, I have looked at other things and it's clearly not.
Right. Exactly. So,
yeah, it's just, I don't really think, unless they could get away from that aspect of it, but then I don't think it would be IFB, because I think IFB is basically built on that, and it's got this like institutional pride and hypocrisy built into it too, where, you know, oh, we're better than everybody else and we know what's right and everybody else has it wrong. And but at the same time, like, at Emmanuel, they had all this ridiculous sick stuff going on, and they just tried to cover it up and act like it didn't happen. Like, don't worry about the most vulnerable people in the church. You got to protect, you know, it just doesn't make sense.
Right. Yeah. No, I agree there. And I've shared the same sentiment. Like, and I respect there's some people who do, you know, see things differently and have different opinions about it, but I really struggle with the information I'm seeing, and the more and more that I talk to people, the more it kind of persuades me to think that it's not something that's going to be, you know, restored in any way. I just don't see that being something they'd even be willing to do.
No, I don't think so either. It's so institutionalized that's just how you do things. And but the good thing is just from IFB churches that I've seen, it seems like their numbers have gone down from when I was involved.
Right.
So I think it's just going to kind of go out on its own.
Yeah. No, I think so as well. And I think the big thing that people need to be ready to do is just to help those who are leaving it and, you know, who are hurt, you know. And that's one criticism I've gotten is, you know, why spend your time on a dying movement? It's like, well, there's still about 2 million people that consider themselves IFB, and there's decades and decades of trauma and hurt associated. So there's plenty of work to be done, and it's not all even going to be done in my lifetime. So, exactly. But I appreciate, you know, people like you sharing your story. I think that's a big part of it. And just sharing, you know, helpful information and how you've move past a lot of that stuff. I think for people who are experiencing similar things, they're going to, you know, they're going to really relate to and be encouraged by what you had to say. So thank you so much for coming on the show.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Preacher Boys podcast. If you appreciated the content on the show, please leave a review on iTunes and don't forget to connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter with the handle @PreacherBoysDoc. Additional information can always be found on PreacherBoysDoc.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona Tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.